Something wicked is coming this way, and only fools are ignoring the signs. So it's time you became a financial prepper like thousands of others. Gold can travel anywhere. It's international. It's its own currency. Allocate to gold now, the timeless safe haven asset. Open an IRA with Noble Gold Investments to physically hold coins and bars, and let real, tangible gold, not just paper, save your portfolio as the economy burns again. Right now, Noble Gold Investments offers a free 3-ounce silver American Virtue coin with every qualified IRA. Just use the promo code GOLD to claim your free coin and secure your family's financial future. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com now. NobleGoldInvestments.com.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
It's viewers. The information contained in this program is not to be construed as medical or legal advice. An appearance on this platform is not necessarily an endorsement, but as always, we encourage you to do your own research. Enjoy the show. Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Friday Night Livestream. Joining me in the studio tonight for the very first time, Dr. Narco Longo. We're going to be talking about the magic and mysteries of Florida, the hidden history laying beneath the surface, the stuff they don't want you to know about. Because if you understand history, well, then maybe you can fend off what they're doing right now. They don't want you to recognize where you come from or how special you are. So do me a favor, if you are here in the Rumble chat or Foxhole or over there on Odyssey, maybe even Getter, help me out by sharing the broadcast or dropping a like, a red pill over there on Foxhole, the plus sign over here on Rumble. And don't forget, in the second half of the show, we are going to be taking your calls. And if you want to check out Dr. Longo's work after the program tonight, you can get to the links in the description below, his YouTube and even an Instagram. All right, do me a favor, sit back, relax, grab your popcorn, and we'll be right back after this. All right, welcome back to the program. Please join me in welcoming our guest for this evening, Dr. Narco Longo. Dr. Longo, how are you tonight, sir?
I'm doing good. How are you, Zach?
I'm doing well. Thank you very, very much for joining me. I really appreciate it. Appreciate you staying up late. Let me actually show everybody your channel, because this is the reason that you and I are speaking tonight. My fiance and I came across your channel on YouTube. You have a vast array of videos, lots of different subjects, but you started out, the first videos that I saw posted were Jordan Peterson and and Ben Shapiro in binaural beats and 432 hertz sounds. And I thought that was hilarious. And then I went and checked out your Instagram, and I was like, this dude's totally based. Plus, you're down here in Florida. So I knew that I had to have you on the program. I guess before we get into like any specific subjects, I would like to know, and I would like the audience to know just a little bit about who you are. And I guess more specifically, how did you come upon this type of research, looking into the history of Florida and the magic and mystery that we have around us?
You know, I don't want to bore people too much with the old story. I'm sure I've told it 100 times on my channel, but, really stoned right now. Also, just come out and say that right now, but,
just rip the Band-Aid off.
So, well, I was born in Florida, always grew up here, had a nice Florida history considerably. And as I grew up, I was always somewhat conspiracy minded, you know, not unwilling to accept that we can be lied to on a massive scale. And I had a couple experiences that I guess I've said kind of helped me commit to this path. In between when I was about 15 to 18, and I'm 26 now, and I'm not a doctor, if people haven't noticed by now, but basically, yeah, that's it. I started on YouTube about 4 months ago. The binaural Ben Shapiro videos were were, you know, somewhat of a joke, posted I think like 6 months ago or February, something like that. But the real deal research, I guess, started getting posted about 4 months ago. And how did I start? You know, the whole Tartaria thing came out, and there's a lot of garbage thrown around in there, too. So I wanted to do that justice, because I don't like seeing my favorite topics getting steered in the direction of fantasy and, you know, sci-fi. Just so I felt an obligation to kind of step up and at least do my home state justice. And the other side of that was pretty much no one was covering Florida at all in an old world context. So I just started snooping around, basically. And I already had kind of a good framework to work from, being an astrologer. And yeah.
So if you don't mind my asking, would you be willing to tell us what that experience was that you had when you were 15 or so?
Well, it didn't mean much to me at the time, but understanding it, looking back, I had a run-in with a invasive bufo toad when I was about 15 years old.
Are those the psychedelic toads?
Yeah, okay. Yes. They're not the desert toads, but they're cane toads, and they have the same toxins, poisons, right?
Yeah.
And basically, I was poisoned in both my eyes by a cane toad. They can squirt their poison at, you know, 6 feet up in the air.
Oh, wow.
And I was up to no good one day on a golf course, and I got squirted by poison in my eye. thought I was going to die, and you know, that didn't trigger any overt awakening in that moment, but for what it's worth, that had to have some influence. And then later on, kind of the more overt, you know, what led to me thinking kind of differently than others was I saw a UFO with some friends.
Oh, wow.
And that was only weeks after that toad incident. And basically, I saw it with a group of friends, and I'm not saying it was alien. You know, that's an important distinction. UFO does not mean extraterrestrial, right?
Just unidentified.
Doesn't mean what's his face? David Wilcock in Spanx in space, right?
Corey Good and the Blue Avians.
Yeah.
So, was it a proper near-death experience with this toad, or did you just...
No.
No, okay.
No. It wasn't an out-of-body experience or anything. I just thought I was going to die.
That's enough to scare you straight.
Yeah.
I would imagine. Okay, so what about the UFO? I've actually had a number of UFO sightings, and some more, I guess, formative than others. But what did you actually see? And that's fascinating to know that you had it with other people, so you can verify that.
Oh, yeah. So one of those people is one of my best friends to this day. The other one, I'm sure I could reach out to at any time to verify, and his little brother. They lived right where we saw it. It was an old school that I went to. We were there in the middle of the night on a pretty much open, like a golf sports grass area. And it was brighter than a planet, bigger, zipping across the sky, covering, you know, miles at a time, zipping, zipping. And we were terrified, ran back to my friend's house that we were, you know, sleeping over at. And as God would have it, his father was the conspiracy theorist of all conspiracy theorists.
Nice.
So I actually got a full dose of 9/11, New World Order, you know, all the good stuff at about 15 years old. After I came home, we came home screaming bloody murder. We just seen a UFO in the sky. And his dad had actually, my friend's father had actually worked on technology that was used in the Matrix film.
Okay.
Had himself had a near-death experience, himself had committed to a path of kind of telling the truth, moved to Florida as a result, right?
Yeah.
And he was one of my closest friends growing up, his family. And so I inherited a lot of, you know, early low-level conspiracy type, whatever you want to call it, conspiracy knowledge through that. And that was really it.
Well, that's awesome. You know, my channel name, Red Pill 78, that's the year that I was born, is 1978. And so the joke was that I was red pilled since birth because I had some influences in my own life that kind of set me on this path very early, like, you know, around the 8 years of age, like learning about the JFK assassination and realizing that elements of our own government assassinated him. And, you know, if they're willing to do that, what are they, you know, not willing to do? I mean, it's quite obvious there's so much happening behind the scenes. So, okay, so that's really awesome. I love hearing that. And when it came to the idea of Tartaria, how did you learn about the concept of Tartaria?
Right. So before the Tartaria movements sort of happened, I was familiar with just the basic Tartars, and, mm-hmm. you know, the subdivision, you know, the smaller part of Russia, or that area, Tartarstan, that goes by that name. And I was familiar with the term Tartar, mm-hmm. how Tartar gets thrown around to describe other people a lot of times in a military context. But I had the privilege of being subscribed to the channel called New Earth. So New Earth was the channel. I don't know if they're still up. She kind of went on like a very apocalyptic route and kind of went cuckoo, but she was this foreign lady who would like squeak out, you know, like a very hard to understand English, but the content was so incredible on this New Earth channel on YouTube. Maybe she's still up. I don't know.
Is her name Sylvie? Sylvie, yes. Ivanova? Okay,
yes.
She is still on YouTube, but it looks like the most recent video, actually it was 9 days ago, update on Prophecy's fulfillment. So
that's the apocalyptic stuff. I'd stay away from that. Stay away from that playlist. But the survivors of Atlantis.
Okay.
Or Survivors of Atlantis playlist. She actually went through pretty much the entire Tartaria reset theory.
Mm-hmm.
She was on to Anatoly Fomenko, of course, very early on. She was talking about Florida, believe it or not. So she was linking up all the Star Forts, the World Fairs, the typical things you hear that kind of let loose after the Tartaria floodgate.
Yeah.
You know, kind of broke in like 2017, around there. And I was kind of late to the party. Like, I did not hear about Tartaria, like this whole movement until a little bit later. I was really just more deep into like astro theology and stuff like that. And, but this New Earth channel, you know, had all the nuts and bolts of the Tartaria theory. She was talking about ancient canals in Florida, about how all these waterways in Florida are, you know, just very unlikely to be natural. How some of these canals. And, you know, it's not just Florida. It's New Orleans, the Gulf Coast of Texas. She was talking about all this stuff well before I had ever got onto the whole Atlantis, in the sense that I was looking at how it's the same myth as the Garden of Eden.
Mm-hmm.
She was looking at it more from this old world architecture perspective, how you see the same architecture popping up all over. And at the end of the day, it is the same thing. But that's really how I got, you know, briefed on a lot of this Tartarian stuff, New Earth. So shout out to her.
Right on.
And
so the first time I ever heard of Tartaria was, I guess, roughly 2018, 2019. I saw John Levi on YouTube. And, you know, I guess I am totally on board with the idea that ancient civilizations have come and gone. We've had resets here and our history is hidden. And, you know, humanity is far older than we know. But I actually just recently did a show with a couple of friends kind of going over the general evidence for Tartaria. And I guess I am interested to know, based upon your research, what do you see as kind of the fantastical evidence or, you know, supporting arguments for Tartaria versus what you believe to actually be evidence that Tartaria was a thing?
I think the first thing that has to be cleared up is Tartaria is, like, you know, admittedly a misnomer. It's
like a concept rather than like an actual civilization.
Yes. Okay. It gets thrown around very loosely. I throw it around very loosely.
Sure.
I'm unashamed to hurl it around. But Tartaria, of course, like I said, it literally applies to a small area in Eurasia. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you look back, there was a Grand Tartary. There
right.
was a Tartary that pretty much went from Turkey, if not farther west, all the way to Japan and all the way down to India, all the way up to Finland. Right. So that's, you know, half the globe right there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, where does it pass into misnomer and where is that word getting thrown around? Well, I have seen maps that do label North America as Tartary, especially,
really?
Especially in the north, like Canada.
Okay.
I've heard people say that these are faked and that these are like wishful,
yeah.
wishfully made maps, like 4chan maps, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't have any of those saved in my files because of that. But where do we get some truth mm-hmm. to this? Because the whole Tartaria theory, you know, really relies on, was it in the Americas? If mm-hmm. if it was in the Americas, that does make it a global civilization.
Correct.
And that really does give meaning to what people think is this Tartaria movement. Now, it also should be said there's a great deal of fantasy, sci-fi, and just downright like mental illness
yes,
that's exhibited in the Tartarian community
mm-hmm.
where it's, you know, I'll be the first to say it. You have people that are so discontented with modern society.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to get a job, and I don't blame them. They don't want to do this. They don't want to do that. You know, they feel like they're in a slave system. They hate the architecture. They hate the food. And people are kind of projecting a wishful future into the past.
Mm-hmm.
They're creating a future they want to see in the past.
Yes.
So I'll admit, there is a lot of that going on. You can, like, there's a lot of bullshit out there.
Oh,
but
yeah.
There was an old world. Rome did erase at least half of the world's history. Rome had two incarnations, the Roman Empire and the Roman Catholic Church,
mm-hmm.
and were largely still under the influence of that regime.
Mm-hmm.
So who are we to say? Well, let's back it up. Where's like some actual evidence of Tartary? Well, Tartars kind of is used to describe the Hun.
Right. I was going to say Genghis Khan, really.
And like Mongolian hordes, yes. Right? Yeah. We hear the Golden Horde. Well, where does that fit into American history? I'll tell you.
Okay.
I've said it a lot on my channel, and every historian would, you know, basically roll their eyes at this. The phenotypes that we see in the northern United States and Canada are largely of Asiatic origin.
Are you saying like Native American phenotypes? You're talking about
yes,
European
Native Americans. Sorry. Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
Important distinction. Yeah. Native American phenotypes, what we call Native American. Like I've said, the typical stereotypical, the unfair depiction of Pocahontas and what Eskimos look like, what Eskimos, Inuit people look like. Well, Inuit is actually the same root as the Ainu of Japan.
Okay.
Ainu, the Inuit. So these are Asiatic people. And we do know that they came across the Bering Strait.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that? Because thousands of them speak Finnish to this day, forms of Finnish.
Like the Sami, aren't the Sami the native Finn?
Yes, yeah. Sami. Well, native is misleading as well.
Okay.
According to my theories, my research, we are leaving the mainstream right here. I believe many of the northern Native Americans to be of Asiatic origin. Well, that's actually exactly what they tell you in the schools.
I've definitely heard that before.
They just tell you that it's, you know, 5 million years back or so, or 100,000 years or whatever. Whatever the out of Africa timeline proposes. Mm-hmm. I don't even know it because it's such nonsense. Basically, somebody did cross the Bering Strait, though. They just push that date back far, far, far back. And they say, this is how every American entered the Americas. Well, what I'm saying is that was actually a very recent Asiatic horseback archer culture that left a very strong impression on native culture. And this is why you see your Apaches and horse-backed natives that are very, very different from the natives you find in the Southeast United States
No, I was just going to say, let's actually talk about that timeline. I mean, I am not a proponent of the out of Africa theory either. I've seen that you follow Robert Sepehur. I'm also a big fan of Robert Sepehur. So definitely looked into this quite a bit. And, you know, I mean, talking about phenotypes, I mean, you can just look at genetics and it's quite obvious that, you know, if every single person on the face of the earth had come from Africa, then there would be common DNA among them. And that just doesn't exist. But based upon your research and your understanding, what was that actual movement like, and what is the timeline we're talking about?
The timeline is very much up for debate, but the movement of people and ethnic groups is not. There's not much wiggle room for debate. In a large group of Asiatic people, what we would call Asiatic or Chinese Mongolian phenotypes left Asia and crossed the Bering Strait at the farthest back, I would say this is 7,000 years back.
Okay.
At the farthest. And this could only be 1,000 years back, 800, because this would coincide.
A thousand years? Wow, that's very recent, much more recent than I thought.
Well, you know, if you know about this whole Moorish uprising that's kind of happening online, people are realizing the original Native Americans are not what we're shown in the movies, which all are kind of the same Pocahontas-looking, feather-wearing, you know, war paint-wearing, beads, leather, deer skin. And we're just kind of, you know, given the image that that was all over the United States.
Right.
We're not, you know, there has pretty much been not a single major movie, Hollywood movie, that's shown native Floridians. Why? Because they're all 6'4" plus, you know, some of them living hundreds of years old. People that look like they're from North Africa.
These would be the Seminoles, or is this another tribe? And the Seminoles is just like a mop-up job.
The Seminoles were 6'4" average. That's very, very tall.
Wow.
For living out in the wild. Now, the Tamukua, who were here 500 years ago when the Spanish and French first showed up, they were 8 feet tall. Close to 8 feet tall, and over 300 years old. They lived to over 300 years old, in the words of the Spanish and the French.
So those were from firsthand Spanish and French settlers coming here and seeing them. Did they?
Yes.
Was this just written in diaries or written accounts, or was there any artwork?
A written and an engraving, and I could show you an engraving if you'd like to see.
Absolutely, yeah. Let me.
These are made by co-host. Theodore de Bry.
Theodore de Bry. Okay.
Can you see my screen?
Yeah, definitely can.
Okay, we're going in right here. See that?
Yep.
Nice. Okay, here they are preparing a feast. Mm-hmm. These are the Tamukua natives. Blah, blah, blah. We can skip a little. As a result of which they live for a long time, for one of their chiefs assured me that he was 300 years old, and that his father, whom he showed me, was 50 years older than he. And I can truly say that when I saw him, I thought I was looking at no more than human bones covered with skin. Wow. They certainly put Christians to shame, who reduced their span of life by holding immoderate feasts and drinking parties. And who deserve to be handed over for training to these base uncivilized people and brutish creatures in order to learn restraint?
So what did they attribute their long lifespans to?
Well, I don't think the Spanish or the French in this case, this is a French encounter. I don't think they understood their culture very well, but right here it says just moderation, by eating more moderately and having feasts. I'm going to fill in some blanks here.
Sure.
What I would assume would be harmonious times. Mm-hmm. So they would feast when it's proper to do so. Whereas Europeans, they're saying feast indiscriminately.
Right.
If they feel like feasting, they feast. And that is bad for the body, in their opinion.
So, do you think there's any connection to the lifespan of this tribe and the idea that the fountain of life is supposedly here in St. Augustine? I've been there. I've drank from it. So we'll see what happens.
Well, you can see they're mixing some fluids back there. I don't know. You know, and there's a hole in the ground. Hole cut in the ground that he's pouring water into. That's interesting.
That is strange.
Well, you know, Florida is the highest. Florida has the highest concentration of freshwater springs in the world.
Okay.
Not many people know that. You're not really taught that in school. You're not shown that in the advertisements, the tourism marketing. Well, that's because it's a well-kept secret. That's because Nestle pulls millions of gallons out of there. That's because Coke used to own much of the rights to Florida spring water for decades. And they kind of just hot potato the rights of the Florida spring water once they start getting too much pushback from the public. And then they just trade the rights off to someone else, to some other big company. And Floridians should have full access to these springs.
Yes.
The quality of life for not only Floridians, but the entire world would be improved greatly if this spring water were allowed to be bottled and distributed. And there might be some people who say distilled water is better for you, and that's okay. If you believe so, that's fine too. But to your point, you're absolutely correct. And I'm going to show you, this is not the only instance of people living long in Florida. Okay. In fact, Florida is the land of long life.
Really?
But like I said, they're giants, so let's not forget about that part. They're tall, and I told you I had some evidence of that.
Mm-hmm.
So here is the Timucua, same tribe. Those are French conquistadors mm-hmm. on the right there. Now, I think his name's Laudonnière. Yeah, Laudonnière. And basically, that pillar, that obelisk, that Stanley Kubrick-looking thing, the natives built for him as a gift.
With the crest on it?
Exactly, with the fleur-de-lis. Yeah. How is that? How'd that happen?
Yeah.
I don't know. You're going to have to track down the the engraver. He died 400 years ago, but... blah, 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 blah. You can read all that if you want to screen cap it, people. This chief, Athor, is an extremely handsome man, intelligent, classic French dude, am I right? An extremely handsome man, intelligent, reliable, strong, of exceptional height, exceeding our tallest man by a foot and a half, and endowed with a certain... Okay. And endowed with a certain restrained dignity, so that in him a remarkable majesty shone forth. Oh, what's this here?
He married his mother
and by her raised more children of both sexes, whom he produced for us by slapping his thigh. Goddamn. And indeed, after she had been betrothed to him, his father, Saturiwa, did not touch her anymore. That's how it goes.
Oh, he just ruined it for me.
Don't you hate when that happens?
Yes, yes. Oh, it was such a promising story right up until that moment. Okay, so what are we looking at now? Are these giant alligators?
Well, we just saw that these Timucua average at least about 7 foot tall, because the tallest guy on this expedition was about six foot three.
Okay,
so if you're a foot and a half taller than that, you're pretty damn tall.
Yeah.
You're close to 8 feet tall, 7'9" about.
I'm still stuck on the obelisk. Do they mention what the obelisk is made of? Is that a stone obelisk? Because it looks like it's stone.
It was probably coquina.
Coquina,
it was probably coquina, this limestone clumped up shell that pretty much all of Florida is made of.
Yes.
That's what the coral castle's made of. That's what St. Augustine's made of.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. That makes sense. That makes sense. Okay. So in keeping with the, I guess the theme of the people being larger, I guess it kind of looked like in the next picture that extended to the animals as well.
Well, that's what it's looking like, Zach. And we just saw these guys are 7 feet tall. Well, if they're 7 feet tall, how long does that make these alligators? Now, we know alligators do not stop growing.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a conspiracy theory, okay? I don't watch Bigfoot Channel, guys. Now, I'm not into cryptids like that. These are real. You know, you can even look back in the fossil record. There were alligators this big. They'll just tell you it was like 20 million bazillion jillion years ago, mm-hmm. right? All I'm saying is this was much more recent than you'd think. This was like biblical times, mm-hmm. not Jurassic times. And if those guys are 7+ foot tall, that's easily a 20, 30 foot gator.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say 30 to 40 feet, but yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And well, they're pretty long. And maybe these artists were taking some liberty. Maybe mm-hmm. they were being a little dramatic.
Perhaps.
Here's pretty much the same picture,
mm-hmm.
mirrored kind of with a different background.
It almost looks like these Indians are wearing like a helmet. They look like, I mean, I suppose it could be thatched or something like that, but mm-hmm. I mean, they look like they'd be metallic, like copper or bronze, maybe.
Well, they tell us that's their hairdo.
Mm.
I'm not sure if I believe that. You can see they weave feathers into mm-hmm. it.
Yeah.
Now, if you've ever looked at the channel Mind Unveiled, he does a good video about bald natives, that mm-hmm. in America there were a whole tribe of natives, and I kid you not, that had completely male pattern balding. So the men, the women, and the children had male pattern balding.
Okay.
And this is actually where scalping culture comes from, is that tribe would scalp off the top section of someone's head and cover their, like a toupee would cover their male baldness.
Okay.
No, I don't think he covers that part in the video. I could be wrong. The scalping part. But that could be true with these. I've heard that said or postulated by some historians, like mainstream historians, that these are taken scalps, like a full-headed scalp
mm-hmm.
worn as a hat. And that could be complete nonsense. That could just be their hairdo. But I agree with you. They do. It is a strange hairdo.
Yeah. Okay.
And now here's a picture of them, and you can see the differences in size going on here. How these women dancing are substantially smaller
mm-hmm.
than the men sitting and the queen sitting up there at the top. Now, when the Europeans got here, they actually said that these people, in particular the Tamukua, looked most like the Picts of the British Isles, like Ireland and Scotland.
Okay.
Because they were tattooed and had typically lighter skin, because they're, you know, tattooed. You could see their tattoos.
Sure. Sure.
And that's exactly what the Irish people were looking like.
Okay.
The
people of like Hawaii and like, you know, that mm-hmm. that part of the Pacific. I mean, that's the same type of thing they do. Do you think there's any commonality between these peoples?
You know, in the grand scheme, everything over near Florida is kind of what you'd call Atlantean.
Okay.
And everything over in the Pacific is kind of Lemurian, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Okay, what's the distinction? Okay, so Atlantean would be from the Atlantic portion, mm-hmm. and then Lemuria would be from the Pacific. I can't remember the name of these people, but I mean, this is like Stone Age times. It was on the border of France and something else. But I had heard that in like southern Florida, there was skeletons that had been dug up that were part of a native Caucasian race that was in Florida, you know, 10,000, 15,000 years ago. Do you know what that is or who those people are?
Absolutely. Those
from the
are
Canarian
the
Canarian Islands. That might be something different, but.
Well, I'll.
Okay.
Those dots do connect. You're right.
Okay.
So those are the bog bodies of Florida. Okay. Bog bodies. Those are some of the oldest burials. Like intentional, like ceremonial burials in the United States. And basically, they're in Florida. So that's a big uh-oh, because if people came in from the Bering Strait, that would mean you have a sophisticated culture mm-hmm. popping up in Florida when they're not supposed to. That doesn't work in the timeline that we're right. given. So also, you have to keep in mind that the sea levels were changed.
Mm-hmm.
And what's so important about, you have two sites that are of extreme importance. You have the Wendover Bog site, which is the one that was found in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the Manasota Key site. And the Manasota Key offshore site is actually the same type of burial. So it's a bog burial. And the first one, the Wendover Bog, was found in a bog above ground, right? Above sea level.
Okay.
Well, they found that, and they found, I think, at least 100 skeletons that were so well preserved. They weren't skeletons. They were bodies that they were so well preserved that they thought it was a murder at first.
Oh, wow.
When they found them, because there was so much flesh and brain matter, they had complete organs intact, skin, right? They were so still a full body that they called the police, and they were like, wow, this is a crime scene. Well, they, you know, quickly they figured out it was a ancient burial, but they had to do some testing to be sure, right? Mm-hmm. So basically, like you said, the DNA tests came out on these guys because they had so much brains in their head. They had so much, they had hair, they had everything. There was an abundance of DNA. Mm-hmm. So they test the DNA and it comes back as European. It's distinctly European. And you can see the guy that tests the DNA flat out tell you, this is European DNA. I've studied DNA for years. Mm-hmm. These are European phenotypes, and I'm certain of it. Well, then they start cracking down and start saying, oh, well, maybe this is Eurasian DNA.
Sure.
Because Eurasian DNA means it's anything across the Atlantic, and it might have came around the other side. That doesn't mean it had to come across the Atlantic, which is the narrative they have to push, because that's the out of Africa theory. Mm-hmm. Well, basically, you find the same exact type of bog burials right across the Atlantic in mm-hmm. places like the Netherlands, Denmark, and most importantly, Finland.
Okay.
And that's important. We'll come back to that. But you find these bog burials, and I'll pull up some pictures. Bog bodies. So the first one was in a lake, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then the second set that they found was in the ocean. So this is the Windover Bog site.
Okay.
Greatest archaeological discoveries ever unearthed in the United States. Among the greatest.
Mm-hmm.
167 bodies found in a pond in Windover, Florida. Blah, 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 blah. They were guessing the bones were 500 to 600 years old. But then the bones were radiocarbon dated. And, you know, I agree. Carbon dating is like, you know.
It's an inexact science.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But if you have organic material and, you know, dating rocks is completely up in the air. It's BS. It's like chopping a chicken's head off, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, dating organic material like this, I give them a little more credence. But it turns out the corpses ranged from 6,990 to 8,120 years old.
Wow.
It was then that the academic community became incredibly excited. That's not true. They became incredibly worried, and they covered up pretty much the entire thing. The Windover Bog has proven to be one of the most important archaeological finds in the United States. Okay, that was in the 80s. Very recently, in 2019, they found another one. Same deal, same type of bog burial. So this was like a civilization spanning both coasts of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
The first one was on the East Coast. This is off the West Coast. Now this one, with the Windover Bog, they were reluctant to agree with this 7,000 plus timeline,
mm-hmm.
7,000 years ago timeline. Well, when this one came out, they had no choice but to swallow it. Why? Because this one, being out in the ocean, verifies that this occurred before the sea levels rose.
Yeah.
Before
the ice caps melted, probably.
But what's important is that this substantiates the radiocarbon dating. This verifies the radiocarbon dating because this is 8,000 years worth of sea level change that matches the 8,000 timeline that the radiocarbon was guessing at. So this is very important. And this is how God works. You know, this thing was pretty much corroborated on both sides of the Florida coast. And this is like a jewel that has slipped through the cracks.
Yeah, I've never heard this specific story before. And this seems like something that should be very, very important and well studied. But, you know, we have this. We have this this issue with ego in the scientific community, and you know, they have an accepted line of thinking that must be followed on a variety of subjects, and archaeology is, you know, and the migration of peoples, it's supposedly settled, and so therefore anything that might cast that in a different light or perhaps give us a different timeline, they immediately discount it, try to shove it between the cracks.
You know, it might be a lack of ego. I think we might need some more ego in the scientific community. I think we might need some more testosterone.
Yeah.
And because these are people who are afraid to step out of the box, who are afraid to challenge the people above them.
Okay.
And, you know, a lot of people kind of get fixated on the whole ego thing. When I look around, I see a lack of ego. I see a lack of sense of self. I see a lack of, you know, identity, willpower, self-assurance. So I think they try and demonize that, but that's another topic.
Well, no, I think you're absolutely right. I suppose when I said that, I was thinking specifically about Zahi Hawass and his reluctance to accept the, you know, that there's anything different happen in Egypt or that the Egyptian culture is older. You know, he seems to be very fixated on his control over that Egyptian narrative. And and so, you know, that was what was going through my mind. But I think you're absolutely right. I mean, it would take some balls to step outside of the lines of currently accepted thinking and suggest that anything different is going on. But, you know, I guess maybe the biggest problem is people's fear of losing funding or of being cast out of the current scientific community. Because for some reason, for whatever reason, they want us to believe that it happened a certain way and they don't want us to know that there was anything different.
Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. Yeah. And you do touch on a good point about Egyptology, because there's so many red flags with archaeology and anthropology in Florida and America because they pose such a threat to the current paradigm.
Mm-hmm.
And Egyptology, archaeology, anthropology in the Middle East, these are industries that have a very high valued aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
And that aesthetic is marketed to you with the music, with the National Geographic as this alluring, exotic, you know, ooh, ancient history. It's from the far away, remote corners of the earth that you'll never go to. So think about this. A country the size of Texas, okay, barely bigger than Texas, Egypt, I'm referring to.
Mm-hmm.
Barely the size of Egypt. Sorry, barely bigger than Texas. Its artifacts and its iconography and figurines line the walls of virtually every major museum around the world. But American native artifacts are not even given the time of day in its own museums, in its own country. Now, how is that? You know, America is 10 times the land area of Egypt. And I assure you, it has at least 10 times the archaeological sites, the mummies, the artifacts, you name it, it's got it. But it is all protected under a pseudo-spiritual guilt trip thing that you do not find in any other country that we, for some reason, are brainwashed with here in America, where No mound is allowed to be touched. No burial is allowed to be flipped over. And hey, I can get behind that. But the same discretion is not shown whatsoever in the Middle East, in Asia. They find something and they crack it open over
there. Sure. Yeah, they do.
Here, it's like these Native Americans. And hey, like I said, I'm okay with respecting people's burials, but I do have an issue with hypocrisy, major discrepancies, double standards. I have an issue with, so I'll call those out when I see them, and I see them when it comes to the coverage, the attention that's given to certain cultures and certain other ones. Think about the role Egypt plays in the narrative. Mm-hmm. Egypt is this grand civilization in Africa that is the perfect ladder, stepping stone from primitive jungle, pre-humans to modern humans. So Egypt is the crux of this whole out of Africa theory. They desperately need Egypt to be the first, the oldest, the most sophisticated. And it's looking more and more like that's not the case, but they're desperately clinging to it because they need to sell us the mummy aesthetic, the pyramid aesthetic, the hieroglyph aesthetic, right? But I'm sure you get the picture.
Oh, absolutely. If the crown jewel of Egypt falls apart, then the entire out of Africa timeline falls apart. So I keep the find that I mentioned that I'm sorry it escapes me, and I've looked this. The reason I looked into it is because I had my DNA checked years ago, and I specifically had a portion of my DNA in common with this particular archaeological find, and so I looked into it years ago. But I can't remember what it is. But, just in doing a little bit of searching for other, archaeological pieces here of this puzzle, there was back in the 80s, the mid 80s, there was a sinkhole that opened up just outside of Miami that had human remains and animal bones from like 10,000 years ago, including a boomerang, which I thought was very.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. They said that it was apparently the oldest hunting boomerang that had ever been found. And
I need to see that.
I'll drop it into the chat here and you can check this out. But, I had only ever heard of boomerangs being used in Australia. I mean, that's like the iconic symbol of Australia. Low Country Brooklyn, one of my mods over on Rumble says, Zach, ask about the Timaquan's major cloaking because of the key lines, #, Pilot Mountain Wheel. Ask him. He should know. Do you know what she's talking about?
Man, nope. I'm ashamed. I don't know. Cloaking?
Yeah, I don't know. Brooklyn, you're going to have to call in. You're going to have to call in and explain this to us.
I'd love to learn about that.
Also, another Ice Age find in Florida, the old Vero Man site in Vero Beach, Florida.
Okay. What can I have heard of that one.
Okay.
He was buried with a large amount of animals clumped in, if I'm not mistaken. I think that was mainly, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, if anyone knows, I don't think he was of any remarkable height. But I think what was important was the animals he was buried with proved that a lot of these giant, like Ice Age animals, were living much, much recently, more recently in Florida than people had realized. So all these animals that got wiped out up in North America, Florida was a haven of survival for many of this megafauna that was dying out in the north. They were still able to live in Florida.
Okay.
So thousands of years after they were extinct elsewhere, you did have mastodon, giant sloth, American lion, American cheetah, American giant animals.
Sure.
And these are not dinosaurs. Okay, a lot of dinosaurs are fake. Like a vast majority of the giant reptilian Jurassic Park movie dinosaurs are just largely fictional.
Sure.
They'll even flat out tell you these are entirely artistic interpretations. They don't even know if they were feathered or scaled half the time.
Yeah.
And they'll just fill in that blank liberally. But what I'm referring to are mammals that are just extinct. And I think everyone can get behind that. And I'd like to tell you, we find those all the time in Florida. If you go diving in one of these springs or caves, the chances you're going to find a mastodon bone are higher than anywhere else in the world.
Really?
Okay. Yes, people go down and find mastodon, mammoth and mastodon, and saber-toothed tiger, like I said, and lion, cheetah, and giant sloth. Those are like the most common ones they find.
What about cave bears?
I don't know about cave bear, but a three-toed horse, like a camel.
Okay, I've definitely heard of those.
Type thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So those were all, some people say, 5,000 years ago. Okay, they were still living and thriving in Florida. That's very, very recent.
I mean,
whereas
buffalo roamed America not all that long ago, too. So, I mean, I think it would be very easy for especially larger species because, I mean, as humans got more and more sophisticated, if their hunting abilities were, you know, really, really good, then, I mean, it would be quite easy for them to take them down. Same with, you know, mastodons and stuff.
You know, people talk about like vapor canopies and the atmosphere being more nourishing. And that allowed the animals to be larger and the humans to be larger.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good angle, sure. And a lot of people cover that on YouTube. What I don't hear a lot of people talking about is when the sea level rises, the land gets smaller. Mm-hmm. And we know when animals are isolated on islands, they shrink.
You're absolutely right. Yeah.
So with that effect, a continent is just an island at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And if the sea level rises, that island is getting smaller by default.
Mm-hmm.
Thus, every mammal on the island, every, you know, land animal will get smaller. But, you know, that's kind of a law of nature.
Mm-hmm.
So sea levels getting higher constrict the land. Right, the overall availability of land,
yes.
And then species get smaller, right? And that definitely seemed to happen, right?
So we've got these bog burials. Do we have any mound burials down here in Florida? I've read about quite a few throughout North America, but just not down here in Florida specifically.
Yes. I wanted to touch on one last part about those bog burials.
Go ahead.
Kind of the important see my screen?
Certainly can.
Nice. All right. I should have left in the URL. This was basically a European, a Finnish researcher who was blogging about the Wendover site, and I just cut out this little paragraph. But if you just grab two of these sentences and search it, I'm sure you could find the original. From talking with local archaeologists and Lund professors, I distinctly remembered them showing me photos and sketches of some ancient Neolithic burials in a large bog on Ven, Stormossen. These burials were exactly like the ones above. The archaeologists were intrigued because this type of burial was commonplace in southern Finland and Karelia, extreme northwest Russia, about 6,000 to 8,000 years ago, same timeline.
Mm-hmm.
Nordic and Russian archaeologists believe that they were the ancestors of the Sami. Judging from the films on YouTube about the Wendover bog site, Florida archaeologists don't seem to know that the burials identical to those in Florida can be found in southern Sweden, southern Finland, and Karelia. But given the results of the most recent DNA studies of the Wendover mummified bodies, this is highly significant. You will enjoy this video. And here they give a picture of a typical pond or bog pond in Finland,
mm-hmm.
and the Wendover pond in Florida. And the burials are the same. Same type. If you just search bog body in Europe, you can see for yourself. And they actually had strawberry blonde hair, the ones here in Florida, too.
Yes, yes. Okay, so we're going to have to take a break for the second half of the show, but I did have one additional article that I found, and it is it tells me the name that I was trying to think of, Clovis, the Clovis people.
Yes.
So this article, which was behind a paywall at The Guardian, because they don't really want you to read it, this is another site discovered in Florida as the result of a sinkhole, nearly 15,000 years old with Clovis people in it. And that is what I have a relation to.
Yes.
So, you guys, we're going to open up the phones in just a second. So let me actually throw that information on screen, and then I'm going to drop it into the chat. And if you have any questions, comments, or anything you'd like to say regarding the study of ancient peoples and the true nature of humanity, then I would love to hear from you guys. And Brooklyn, I would also like to hear from you in regards to what you were mentioning in that super chat. Let me drop this into the chats here, and then we will be right back after this. See you in a second. All right, welcome back. Thank you for sticking around, guys. We actually have our first caller on the line. But yes, Clovis people, I was trying to remember that. They are from the border of France. They can trace it back over there. But 15,000 years ago, people living here in Florida, I would be very interested to see how the DNA lines up with all of these various ancient Neolithic sites, rather, and how it compares to the DNA of what they say it's supposed to. I'm really surprised that given all that we know, all that has been revealed, and with, just the free flow and exchange of information that we have now. I mean, why we're not seeing people in the scientific community, going down these lines of thought. I mean, people understand that we've been lied to. You know, it's not just archaeology, but the lies about archaeology and the progression of humanity, it's indicative of everything else that has been covered up throughout history. I mean, this is why the idea of conspiracies is so popular, and why we have so much disinformation and misinformation floating around out there, because people know they've been lied to and people are looking for the truth. It's so important, I think, for people to remain skeptical about everything that you're being told, because just because the information you're being given is different from the accepted narrative doesn't necessarily mean that it's true. There's a lot of people out there who will do and say things just to get you to follow them or have you jump on their bandwagon. But I really appreciate you, Dr. Longo, and I appreciate your research. Vector, you're on the air.
Tiffany.
Hello, Red Pill 78. Hello, Dr. Longo. It's a pleasure to speak to you. I've been researching all morning and watching your videos. So I was fascinated starting off with the Florida video about the Florida oranges and how the apple, and how Florida is the Garden of Eden and the lost Atlantis, and how this all links into the flood story, I do believe. And, all the giants and all of this stuff. There is so much going on here, bro. I wish I'd found you long ago. It's a pleasure to meet you. Yeah, man. Like, please tell me what you think.
Thanks for that. I appreciate that. Basically, with the oranges, you can follow all these little threads. There's all these threads. A lot of times I'll say follow the beards, because the word beard in itself can kind of lead you to this same truth about the pre-flood people and the post-flood people. Well, with the fruit, it's the same way. People don't know.
A human catastrophe is closing in. Nobody knows how far this one is going to go. You can feel the heat as tension is rising globally. War is expensive. Open a Noble Gold Investments IRA today, and you can claim a free 3-ounce silver American Virtue coin. Just use the promo code GOLD. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com now.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
People think, oh, Florida. Citrus coming from Florida, that's ridiculous. Citrus comes from Asia. Well, did you know Columbus brought citrus with him on the very first expedition? On the third on the second or third expedition, he brought, well, yeah, sorry, you watched the videos, I'm sure you know, but on the second and third, he intentionally brought citrus with the intent of planting it there on purpose. And not only that, people don't, something I left out of that video, a lot of these governors and conquistadors and warlords that were getting sent over to claim territory in the New World, people don't understand. They would get a lot of these deals, especially with, I think, Pedro Menendez, they would get paid half in cash, half in money. Okay. The other half
I thought you were saying one half was in cash and one half was in money, but it's the first half. Well, no. What's the second half?
Okay. So one half would be cash money. The other half would be fruit and the potential of growing fruit on their land. They would be told, you'll be rich if you grow this fruit on your land. So here's citrus, go to the New World. Well, with that citrus, a lot of these early expeditions were abandoned, right? Well, when different settlers came back hundreds of years later, they found the natives had completely adopted citrus cultivation. Yes.
Really?
Everywhere. It was everywhere. I watched your video. They came back. So Christopher Columbus apparently brought the oranges and all the citrus and everything. It was perfect in the Florida climate, not like anywhere else in the United States or in the world where there's irrigated. It's just not the same. It's the best juice. And then they came back later, the Europeans, and they found it had just been planted at everywhere by the natives, and they were just experts at growing citrus. So I'm sorry to interrupt you, but that was just so fascinating for me.
No, it's perfect. Yeah, it was thriving. It was thriving in the New World. So if the natives had it fully adopted, by the time the next wave came in, and that first wave was made up of conquistadors, warmongers. Okay, these people brought essentially Rottweilers to go tear apart the natives for fun. That's what they do for fun a lot of the time.
Wow.
They'd rape anyone they didn't kill. They cut their heads off. They played with their bodies. You can see all this in the engravings.
They gave them blankets that had smallpox on them to kill the natives and decimated like a lot of people.
Yeah.
So they knew what they were doing. Go ahead, sir.
I don't mean to laugh at that, but it is
bad, yeah.
it is comical, the atrocity upon atrocity upon atrocity. And then we take their word as if it's the word of God. We're like, oh, that's what they said happened, so we'll just believe them. Mm-hmm. So if a bunch of murderous psychopaths are saying they brought citrus to the New World, and citrus was their essentially how they got paid, well, I think we should dig into that a little deeper. I think we should, especially when, you know, like you said, if you start looking at the religious connotations of orange, well, citrus literally translates to golden apple, right?
What's
an apple? An apple is an Apollo. Apple is Apollo. Well, a golden Apollo, that's the sun. And I have these old ads. I didn't put some of these ads in that video too, because a lot of times I'm finding this stuff out as I'm making the videos. And then once the video is posted, a lot of subscribers will send stuff they have on it. I guess that's what Discords are for. I guess I'm gonna have to make a Discord or something. But basically,
this fascinates me because I'm a chef. I don't know if you know this, I'm also a background. So I'm born in Australia, but where my family come from is the land of citrus. I'm talking oranges, the size of a half soccer ball, huge, you know. So I understand the influence of the Moors in particular and how this would have been an influence both in the Caribbean and in Florida and all of this area for such a long time. And it's been so hidden. And also, things about the Phoenicians doing a lot of trade and the huge anchors. Okay, so there's John Saxa, the House of Saxe is a royal family from Switzerland, I do believe, and all of the footage that you took of those huge anchors with the perfectly bored holes and all of that stuff from all over Florida, in particular in Tampa and in Tampa Bay. All of the channels dug, the other stuff on Bimini. So I did a lot of work this morning. I've been watching this for literally hours and hours, bro. It's fascinating stuff, man. I don't even know how you got in contact with this old guy in the first place. So if you can tell the audience about John Saxer and the Stone Anchors, that would be fascinating.
Yes. Yeah. I think, that's kind of like the most exciting. I'll just be honest. That's kind of the most, can you guys see my screen?
Yes, we can.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
So, that's no doubt the most exciting thing you'll find on my channel. Dare I say it's some of the most exciting shit you'll see in your life is being some of the first people to be on this wave. And trust me, it's going to be a wave because they're already sending their little Graham Hancocks and Randall Carlsons out to get ahead of this.
Really?
So just wait and see what's going to happen with the Atlantis awakening. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. This is a stone anchor, an ancient stone anchor. This is a typical one that you'd see, right? Well, I'll talk about, sorry, you asked, you asked some good questions, and I think people would love to hear that. How did I meet John Saxer and stuff like that? Well, we can start here.
I saw the story, but like, just if you might want to explain to them, that he wasn't easy to get hold of, really, was he?
No. So this is an ancient stone anchor. Florida has some of the largest and oldest stone anchors in the world. This is what they look like.
Yeah.
These are some of the ones I found actually after making the documentary. So these are not in the documentary.
Yeah.
The Saxer Stones and the Saxer Saga. Now, these ones were in the documentary. So
the man himself.
That's John Saxer there on the right. He is of royal descent. And you can verify that. It is no funny business. His last name is Saxer. If you go look at the Queen of England, the Queen of England's last name before they changed it during World War I, because they were fighting the Germans and they themselves were German, that's going to cause some problems when you're ruling Britain and Britain's fighting Germany. So they changed their name to Windsor, the name of the castle they were living in. So that's where you get your Windsors. Before that, they were called the Saxas, the Saxa Coburg Gotha. Okay. That man right there is a real Saxer with an R. He is descended from the royal von Sax line of Swiss nobility, descended from Johann Ulrich Christian von Sax. Sorry, Ulrich. Fuck, what was his name? I don't know.
And this is the Merovingian line, isn't it? All the way back to Isaac. Sorry to interrupt you, but that's where this is going, isn't it? So, and also the Saxons. Go ahead, sir.
No, you know it better than I do, man. For sure. Yeah.
It's my alley. This is what I do. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You're fresh on it. Basically, yes, he is a real Saxon. The Saxons were the ruling class of the German, the Franks, the Alans, right? They were the ruling class, the Normans above these people. And the Merovingians, they got segmented into a couple different bloodlines, and kind of the not so good ones, the rotten ones, kind of rose to the top and took over. Well, families like his kind of fell to the wayside as monarchies kind of got, phased out of society. Well, royal blood is worth something, and I am a believer in that. And I don't think it's what everyone thinks it is. It's not Disney Frozen, sparkly.
The Sun Grail. So yeah. Everyone thought the Holy Grail and the alleged bloodline of Jesus. I don't know, man. It's been hyped up in the Da Vinci Code and other type of quasi-fictional. I don't know, man. What do you think, Zach? Like, this
listen,
is
like, yeah, Dr. Longo, if we could just I would like to go back to that picture of John. They're right here. But that last one was quite striking, and I think it's important to just kind of discuss the implications of what we're looking at here. So before I had found Dr. Longo and seen the Saxer saga, I had seen around all over the place down here these stone anchors, and they're of varying sizes. But, if a stone anchor this size being used on just a standard sized ship, I think it's not feasible. It's not possible that they could fit it on there and have the capacity to hoist it up. I mean, why would you need an anchor this large on, you know, a standard clipper ship or the ships that were being used at that time? It only makes sense if it's going to be used with a ship that is much, much larger.
Zach, apparently two of these is enough to anchor an aircraft carrier. One of them a huge U.S. warship. So there's that. And this all goes back to the giants. Look at all those pictures of those huge people, those 24-foot people. You know, there were giants. And then we're talking about all the flood evidence and everything. So, you know, this all ties into Noah and God destroying all of these abominations, right back into the Greek mythology and the Garden of Eden and all of this stuff. And, you know, basically the Garden of Eden and ancient Egypt and all that stuff being in Florida, not in Europe. So these things are really cooking my head. It's really hard to get my head around.
We haven't even really gotten to that stuff yet. I don't know that we're even going to have time to dive into this stuff fully. But
sorry, Zach.
It's okay. Listen, I want you to tell us what you've just pulled up here, Narco. But after this, Vector, we've got to take the next caller because we've got three people on the line still. So go ahead.
Well, great stuff, Vector. Feel free to reach out to me on Instagram.
I will, bro.
Directly. Great stuff. Great. You articulated so greatly.
And you have a gorgeous girlfriend, by the way. Absolutely fabulous. Like, I hope you're still together. So there's that.
That's my sister.
Oh, really? I'm sorry. No, I've been watching it, bro. I know. You're a good troller. You're all right, eh? You're all right. Yeah. You can stay, mate. You can stay on my couch anytime. All right. Let's go, Brandon. Right. Go ahead, sir.
Thanks. All right. Who were the Glades Giants? Were they born that way, or did ancient Indians use bone stretching formula? I think you've been using a little bit of that bone stretching formula, Vector.
Maybe it's that penis stretching formula. That's that. But anyway, you're going to love my show, bro. You got to come on and do an interview. Sorry, but anyway, okay. Go ahead. I'm taking that Zach's show. He's going to.
That's all good. I've highlighted the important parts here. I'm just trying to paint a picture. Yes, so we just saw the giant fucking anchors, the biggest anchors on the planet. That's kind of why I showed you the giants at the beginning, so we can get a picture of what's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this kind of pinpoints it back in Florida. Who were the Glades Giants? Well, this is going to show you that there was possibly a maritime culture, because they would have had to have gone from the tip of Florida to the tip of the Yucatan, which was not very far at all, not very far, but you would need a ship. Could these people have been descendants of the Mayas of the Yucatan? Blah, blah, blah. Were they early Calusas? Were they originally like Maya, a race of cannibals? I don't know if that's necessarily true.
Right.
No Spanish historians seem to classify Calusas as cannibals. So they just admit that that's just pure conjecture. We have giant basketball players and football players today, as well as giant African tribes. So they tie it to possible giant African tribes, which I think is true, because I'm going to show you another picture here where we clearly see the Florida natives were biblical people, Semitic people, named in the Bible. And from Seminole, you get the word. Sorry, from Semitic, you get the word Seminole. It's just a different suffix to the same root word. It's like saying Creole instead of Creetic or something. If you were describing people on the other side of the Atlantic, it's just a it's an American suffix. Ola, Apalachicola, right? Mm-hmm. Coca-Cola.
You're teaching me so much that I didn't understand about America. Like, I'm mind blown. I don't know what to say.
You're in Australia, you said?
Yes, I'm in Brisbane, the world's most livable city in Brisvegas, the other Sunshine State.
Exactly. It is the other Sunshine State. And Florida is... Florida is...
Because I know there's so many people here, bro, but I just have to say the cane toad was introduced from South America to eat the cane beetle in Australia. It didn't eat the cane beetle. It ate all the native fauna and flora. It's totally what you were talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. And they're fucking everywhere here. We play golf with these things. Not me, of course, because I love them. But they are a pest. and
that's what I was doing.
The country, the snakes eat them and die. So we fucking hate the cane toads. And basically, the Queensland rugby league team mascot is the cane toad, and New South Wales is the cockroaches. So all the Australians know about the derby between the two states, Queensland and New Zealand and New South Wales. So there's so much going on here with Florida, my spiritual home. I don't want to take up too much time, Rupert, because I feel bad about the people on the line. So maybe you want to bring the next person on, and I'll get in touch with Dr. Longo. You're a legend, brother. And I'm stoned as shit as well. So don't worry. It's all good.
Hang up, dude.
All right.
You're a legend. All right. I love you.
Thanks, Vector. Thanks. We'll see you, dude. Appreciate it. Okay. Oh, and Tamer, you were the next caller and you just hung up. Damn it. Okay. Well, get back on the line and I will bring you back. So were you were playing golf with a cane toad? Is that how you got stuck in the eye?
I was kind of being a piece of shit and kicking them with my friends. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's how it happened.
They got revenge on you. All right. So we're going to bring in the next caller. Tamer, if you get back on the line, I will take you as soon as we're done with this caller. Caller, you're on the air. Can I get a name?
Hi, Zach. This is First Amendment Rights.
First Amendment Rights. It's so good to hear from you. Fellow Floridian, are you enjoying the show tonight? Hey,
Dr. Longo, I have so enjoyed this show. I have so enjoyed it. Here's my question. What connection to, if there is one, and I'm asking because you seem so incredibly knowledgeable in this history that, you know, truth is coming out, and all lies will be revealed and dark to light. And you know what I'm saying? And what, if any, connection is there between what you found in Florida's history to the Sumerians, if at all? But I would love to know what your understanding is of the Sumerians and the relationship between the Sumerians and Florida, if any.
Of course. That's a good question. And thank you. Thank you for that. Basically, there's two parts to that. Sumeria, you know, if you've followed my channel a little bit, I make the Finnish is Phoenician connection. Finnish is Phoenician. Phoenician went by the word Punic. Okay. Finnish went by the word runic. So there's another connection. Well, Sumerian, which is supposedly the oldest civilization and oldest, you know, one of like the oldest hieroglyphics, or what do they call it? Cuneiform writings, right? Well, that Sumerian, the oldest civilization, is Sami or Suomi. Suomi, which is what the Finnish call themselves. The Finnish call themselves Suomi. So when you see those old Sumerian men with their long bock beards, their long beards and their pointy hats, that's what Phoenicians look like. That's what Finnish people look like up in the North Pole. So this ancient maritime race came down from the North Pole at one time. But how does civilization start, quote unquote? It didn't start in Sumeria, but how did it start in Sumeria? It restarted in Sumeria. Sumeria is where civilization was restarted. Now, why is that? Because an ark left Florida after a flood, a tsunami, whatever you want to call it, a cataclysm, an asteroid, probably the Chicxulub crater in the Gulf of Mexico, which they think killed the dinosaurs, quote unquote dinosaurs. Mm. Well, that would have sent a shockwave right to Florida. That's where you get all the anchors getting tossed up onto land. But if you were a big ancient ark, maybe from Arkansas, that has the most biblical names of any city of any state in America, Arkansas, because it has the most Mississippian coastline. That's the river of Isis, Mississippi. Well, Arkansas, you had arcs going down the Mississippi River. Well, Florida was a center of trade for this ancient maritime culture, just like it is today with the world's produce. And it's, well, you get the idea. If these arcs were out on the open sea when this cataclysm happened, and they were truly out in the middle of the Atlantic or high up off the coast of Florida, they would not even know that this cataclysm had happened. And they would be out on the open ocean where they would not even notice a tsunami. And they would, if the sea levels changed and there was great changes happening underneath them with the waters and the tectonic plates shifting, God knows how extreme this cataclysm was. You know, Randall Carlson and Graham Hancock certainly have their own take on the whole thing. Well, whatever happened, these ships wouldn't have been able to return to Florida because Florida is so low to the sea that any disturbance could leave it covered for days, weeks, months. You know, we just saw what happened with even just a hurricane can leave entire portions of Florida underwater for weeks. Well, this ship would have landed, and it did land. This was Noah's Ark, landed in the mountains of Ararat. And you find ancient stone anchors on the mountains of Ararat in Armenia. And you find an old petrified ship. They're not so eager to admit that that's an actual petrified ship, but you can go look it up. It looks like a petrified ship.
Mm-hmm. Narco, but, if I may, yeah. Just before you continue, so the stone anchors, are they coquina stone anchors? Are they the same type of stone anchors?
That's a good question. And that's why I say this ark in particular that landed in the mountains of Ararat, the one that survived, and this is like Noah's ark, right? Noah's ark, right? Means many things, but that ark would have been coming from farther north in the Americas, either okay. Georgia, Apalachicola River, or Mississippi, Arkansas area, because that's granite. Everything in Florida is coquina. Mm-hmm. And those giant coquina blocks, those would have needed giants, right? Mm-hmm. The blocks that are in Mount Ararat, they're big, and they're really big, and humans would have a tough time moving them. But they could move them. The one that we find in the front yard there with John Saxer, the tall one that's twice his height, mm-hmm. No amount of humans is going to move that and get it on a boat. But the ones in Mount Ararat, theoretically, are small enough to where they could be used by a group of men. And that those are granite or some type of very hard rock that is not coquina. So those are not coquina. They don't originate from Florida. But we do know that Noah's Ark in the Bible was written. It was written that it was made from gopher wood. Gopher wood only exists in the Apalachicola River area of Northwest Florida. And that's what the Ark was supposedly made out of. And I believe that to be true. I believe that area was an Ark building center. Well, why do I believe that? There's an Ark Adelphia, not far from there. There's Arkansas. There are many, many Ark names around that area. Exactly. And I don't think that's just by coincidence. I don't think that those are just Mormons naming things for fun.
Sure.
And to tie it back into Sumeria, those people that would have survived this flood and landed in the mountains of Ararat, when they came down from the mountains, they made their way, and civilization began to rebuild itself. And Sumeria would have been one of those first rebuilding spots. Now, there's another way to look at that. And like I said, there's two ways to look at that. That's the Noah's flood part. If you look at it from the Bach saga angle, after this cataclysm, the reset was many people leaving the North Pole and coming back to these lands that were destroyed. And from the North Pole, from Finland, essentially, they re-implemented society to the sparse, devastated survivors in the tropical lands. So when they got to Sumeria, this is where the word, I'm going to tell you where the word Babylon comes from. When they got to Sumeria, these tribes that were originally benevolent and were welcomed as gods because they brought agriculture, written language, and domesticated animals with them wherever they went. Well, when they got to Babylon, this one group, and in the Bach saga, it says it's India, but I believe it was Babylon where the first sins were committed after the flood. And this sin is actually civilization itself. It's like the beast, the Babylon system, where Babylon, like the reggae artists always say, is like a personification of evil and industrialism, technology, transhumanism, even in the ancient context. Sumeria is where a lot of these societal social engineering started happening with bad intentions. And that's why we are told civilization started in Babylon, in Sumeria, because they want us to live a Babylonian culture, society, that they're telling us has its roots in Babylon. I don't think I'm from Babylon. I don't think my culture comes from that area. But that's what they try and convince us of in school. So those were just survivors that restarted near Sumeria.
Fascinating stuff. All right. First Amendment rights. Please continue.
Dr. Wanda's channel or website?
Do I have a website? Is that what you said?
Yes, yes.
My assistant is helping me make a website right now, but it's not up and running yet. But I'm on Instagram at old_world_Florida, and my YouTube, of course.
Which is also Old World Florida. You can get to the links of both of those in the description of this video.
Okay, thank you so much. Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas, and I look forward to talking to you in the new year. Yeah.
Absolutely. Thanks. Merry Christmas to you, too. Thank you so much.
Good question. Bye-bye. Yeah.
Excellent stuff. I wanted to ask the same thing, but about the Phoenicians. I'm from Michigan, and in Michigan, we've got ancient copper mines all over the place. And I know that mm-hmm. the Phoenicians were a seafaring culture, and their copper work can be found in many different ancient sites. But I just wondered if there was anything here in Florida that linked to the Phoenicians as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, to talk about the copper, why the copper is so important is because the Phoenicians built their empire off of copper and tin. Mm-hmm. The tin came from the British Isles, largely. That's where we get the word Britain.
Okay.
And with what was the other one? Sorry, I'm spaced out. What was the other metal? Copper. So the copper, like you said, was coming from the Michigan, the Ohio, even down towards Mississippi area, the Mississippi River and Ohio River Valley areas.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that copper, even though it was being mined in ancient mines, is missing largely from the American archaeological record. And they don't know why. Mm-hmm. Well, it's pretty obvious why. Because the Phoenicians were shipping it across the Atlantic. They were coming here. Number one, the Romans and the Greek. Why? It's so backwards. We look to the Romans and the Greek and say, well, why didn't they know the New World was here? Why didn't they know the Americas were there? Because the Phoenicians never let them out of the Mediterranean Sea. So, of course, they wouldn't know there's a land mass across the Atlantic. The Romans did not start exploring outside the Pillars of Hercules, Straits of Gibraltar, until the Phoenician Empire was in a completely weakened state, right? And they were no longer able to keep the Romans out. or keep them in the Mediterranean. So the Phoenicians had complete dominion over the Atlantic. They could travel the open seas in the night with no visual aids, so they could leave the coastline. The Romans and the Greeks had to keep and the Egyptians and the Etruscans had to keep the coastline in view, or else they'd get lost, right? Because they didn't know the nature of the heavens like the Phoenicians did. And the Phoenicians, this is how you know the Phoenicians are Vikings as well. Vikings and Phoenicians are the same people.
Okay.
They are. People do not want to admit this, and I don't hear enough people saying this on YouTube. In fact, I don't hear anybody saying this on YouTube, except for Connor McDowery, who was an author. There's some of his narrations out on YouTube. Connor McDowery, I recommend his work to everyone. Basically, you know, the Mormons were all about the Old Testament happening in North America. And look at their name. They have the word more right in their name.
Like Moors?
Exactly.
Okay.
So that's it. That, it's all in the phonetics, you know. If only people understood what stories are in each word that we tell.
Good stuff.
But okay. I'm gonna show you. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
You asked to really, and feel free to bring someone else on. I'm just going to call.
Well, you go ahead and keep talking, and I'm going to bring Bruce in. I just didn't want him to hang up and lose him. Eric, you are the next caller after that. But also, I have a couple of thank yous from Super Chats on Rumble. Casey Collins says, has Dr. Longo ever heard of the book 1491, New Revelations of the Americas Before Columbus by the author Charles C. Mann? Totally opened my eyes. Are you familiar with that work? No. Okay. Well,
no.
Put it on your list. And then Design Lady LA said, this is one of the most interesting shows you've had. Any info about the underwater finds in Miami near the DuPont Hotel?
Well, I think I'm learning more than I'm teaching on this one. I haven't heard DuPont Hotel underwater. I know about the Miami Circle. I know about the aquifers that are pretty much free to tap into, that the Vizcaya Museum's big Kikina Castle in Miami, Coral Gables area, they have a big open swimming pool that just draws water straight from the Florida aquifer, and it's crystal clear. It glows turquoise blue, just like the Florida Springs. And then you have the Venetian pools. Venetian, right? You asked about Phoenicians. Well, Phoenician is Venetian. Okay. Venetian pools in Florida made out of Kikina rock, same stuff the coral castles made out of. Also, that the city fills with this water. Every day they fill it up with the water from underground, essentially. And the people that live in Miami go and live in it. But I don't know specifically about that. But feel free to reach out to me on Instagram with good leads and stuff. I always incorporate people's leads that they send me. If they're good, I'll make a whole video out of it. I've done it before.
Design Lady LA, if you can send any more specific information, I've attempted to search and find something with the tidbits that you left, but I can't find anything relevant to underwater archaeological finds with that info. So if you have any links, I would love to see that myself. Also, one more. Where We Go One, We Go All 38 says, thank you again, RP, for all you do. Dr. Narco Longo, you are a refreshing break and look forward to subscribing to you on YouTube. Are you able to share anything on Florida Haunted Highway I-4 dead zone? Any info there, Narco?
I have heard of that one. So that's not news to me, but I will say it's not my expertise at all. I'm not like a paranormal researcher by any means.
Okay.
I do think it plays in to the whole big picture, of course. St. Augustine being the most pretty much one of the most haunted cities in the world, unanimously declared. You know, half the people that go there, it seems like, have some type of experience. So no, I'd love to hear about that too.
Okay. You know? Awesome. Well, on that note, I will now kick it over to Bruce. Bruce, I was just wondering where you've been. It's good to see you. I hope you're doing all right.
Thank you, Brother Zach. Yes, yeah. I'm good. I was down in Florida. I sent you a couple of texts. I don't know if you got them.
No, I thought that wasn't happening until I thought we still had time. I'm sorry. I didn't know you were down here, dude.
Yeah, no, that's okay. Don't worry about it. I'll be back again in March and April. So,
okay. Just call me.
I may have to come back. Yeah, absolutely. I may have to be back sooner. Mom's having some more trouble, unfortunately.
Sorry to hear that.
So if everybody out there can keep Mama Wayne in your prayers, I'd appreciate it. Her Parkinson's disease has gotten really bad. And her dementia has increased substantially, where we have to get nurse aides around the clock now to be with her.
I'm so sorry to hear that, brother.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. So if all goes well, I won't have to come back until March, but there's a good chance I might have to come back just after the new year. But okay. Let's digress from that. And I will get in touch with you before I come down.
Perfect.
Dr. Longo, pleasure to meet you. Thank you for your information. This is the kind of stuff we need as a distraction from all the craziness of the bizarro world that we've been living in. And based on your information that you're putting out there, that there were other bizarro worlds before this one. And I just have to ask you, because there was a video that popped up about 8-9 months ago where they, I think it was Unveiled, was the name of the channel on YouTube, where they talk about mountains possibly being the remains of petrified trees from the giant civilization. And I wanted to know if you had any information on that or if you've done any research on that.
Yeah, there is a specific site out west, and I want to say it's like Devil's
Tower.
Devil's Tower, that's it, yes.
Which was used in the movie, wasn't it? Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Yep.
So based on that premise, have you done any research or have you done any digging on that aspect of, you know, with the giants being around, that those are the tree stumps that are left over?
I mean, we don't have any things that big in Florida, but I'm definitely behind the theory that one in particular, Devil's Tower, was something that was sawed in half. Now, as for just all mountain ranges being leftover petrified wood, I think I'd have to see more on that before I, you know, would teach or preach that myself. But I will say, I've never seen a mountain getting made. I don't think anyone's seen a mountain getting made. And how are we going to believe that this is just like an incremental process where that just starts out as flat land and it just takes millions of years to just push up? And then, you know, but then at the same time, sometimes they'll tell us it's all sudden and that mountain ranges can just appear in, you know, a tectonic upheaval, pretty much, that they can just pop up. And I've never seen that either. I've never seen a mountain created. We have volcanoes, we have this and that, but I've never seen elevation be generated from scratch. So I think that is important. And I do think when we look at areas like the Grand Canyon, you know, where is all the water coming from? Where we had another couple hundred feet of water level, ocean level. And are they telling us it's ocean that whittled down the Grand Canyon? I have a hard time getting behind that. You know, was it the Colorado River that was just much higher? You know, that doesn't make much sense to me either, that these rivers just whittle a straight course, you know, winding course through these incredibly hard cliffs, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I can drop that YouTube link in the chat if I don't know if I have privilege or right to do so. Zach, would it be okay if I
did? You're always welcome to drop links in the chat. Okay. I know some people are weird about that stuff, but I encourage it. That's totally cool.
Okay, so I just put it in the chats, but that's the YouTube video, Dr. Longo, that directly relates to the unveiled site that put up that video 8 months ago about certain mountain ranges actually becoming a, you know, or leftover petrified stumps. Not mm-hmm. all of them, but specific ones. And when you watch the video, you'll be amazed at how they all look like tree stumps. And they do comparisons, which mm-hmm. is amazing. But I just want to thank you very much, Zach. I'll be in touch, brother.
All right, good stuff.
Yeah, I want to go fishing with you. Ha ha ha,
dude. I'd be totally down. Totally down.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
The last time Bruce was here, we went to lunch at the Funky Pelican on Flagler Beach. And that pier, I don't know if you saw this, Bruce, but the pier has been essentially wiped away. Like half of it's gone.
No.
Yeah, a lot of our beach is gone too now. And Matanzas Beach, which is probably my favorite place to go in the area, you know, a lot of that coquina bedrock has been exposed. It used to be there was just a couple of specific spots where you'd go out on these outcroppings and kind of walk out into the ocean on it. And now it's like it's all coquina. The beaches have just been torn away over here. It's part of the natural process, I know, and that sand will probably get redeposited. But in the meantime, down there in Flagler Beach, we've got a lot of people whose houses are at risk right now.
So did Funky Pelican get damaged?
No, they haven't been damaged, right. But it's just the pier is going to have to be totally rebuilt.
That's a shame.
Yeah.
But I hope and pray they are able to fix that up too, real quick.
Absolutely.
But I will be in touch. And right, again, bro. Dr. Longo, thank you so much for your insightful information. God bless everybody.
God bless you, brother.
Peace out from Batman.
All right. We'll see you. All right. Good stuff. And we've got Eric on the phone next. Bringing you in. And Narco, I hope to have you back on the show again in the future. There's so much more that I want to like dive into, do some deep stuff on. And obviously, we don't have time necessarily tonight, but I love the stuff that we've been able to touch on so far. Eric, I love your picture, Eric. That's great. And let me just see here. Over on the Foxhole, Rise Attire, thank you very much. He says, I come for the gold pills and I stay for the woo. Nakaz 808 says, such an interesting show. Great way to open up your mind. Thank you to Porpoiseful for that cookie. Matt 1776 says, red pill. That's it. This is a big red pill. Gambera, thank you for that ship. And then Chops ITMC says, a cookie for the guest. What do you know of the crushed trilobite under a human foot in Texas? Do you know anything about that? No.
Huh?
All right. You're going to have to go through and watch the show yourself so that you can get all of these tidbits and look into it.
Yep.
There was another a giant site that I believe was in Texas. It had it was something to do with a wall. It was like mm-hmm. a giant underground wall that was built. And I believe that they found like rooms that had been dug in as well. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, so my friend, working partner, colleague, I guess you could say, Ben from Analog, Waking Up with Analog.
Okay.
He did. I think an ambulance is going to go by, so sorry.
It's no worries.
But basically, what were we talking about?
Texas giant, I want to say it's okay, like Kensington so, Bowl or something like that.
Well, there's the Kensington runestone, okay. Which is something else. But I think
Rockwall,
you could be right.
Rockwall. It's Rockwall, Texas. That's what I'm thinking of. But the Kensington rune, I'm mixing my archaeological mm-hmm. metaphors.
So there was a wall, a great wall. They call it like the Mississippian Wall. Mm-hmm. They call it the Great Wall of Texas, the Great Wall of another state. They call it. And basically, it didn't just stop at Texas. It went down farther south, and it went very far north of Texas, too. Okay. And it was likened to the Great Wall of China by just about every early explorer that saw it. And so credit to Ben from Analog, Waking Up with Analog. You can find him on my channel, of course. He works with Karimo, too, if you guys know Karimo. On YouTube. Well, he found this old article that's at least 100 years old, probably like 150. And it flat out shows, it's, and I don't think it's just one article. I think it's multiple articles corroborating this Great Wall of America that was mostly in or around Texas. Yeah.
I know that was also giant tools that were found there, or perhaps even a giant skeleton. And but yes, the account that I read of like the living quarters, essentially, I mean, it was just, you know, massive. And of course, the skeleton and the accompanying tools, you know, it paints quite the picture.
You know, I don't always talk about like the Southwest because it's not my territory. You know, there's tons of researchers that do a great job over there. Like John Levy, I think is, I'm not a big viewer of John Levy, but I know he does. I think he's over there in the Southwest and he kind of focuses on that area. So it's not the focus of my research whatsoever.
Right.
But we've all heard those stories of ancient Egyptian temples in the Grand Canyon.
Yes.
Under the rocks in Arizona, in the caves, red-haired giants in Arizona, stuff like that. So even Lincoln talked about the red-haired giants from you know, like the Midwest, Midwest United States. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, you asked earlier about Phoenicians, and I don't think I actually got to the point and showed you what you were asking for. I can show you exactly what you were looking for earlier. I had it up on the screen for a little. I just didn't say anything. Here we go. This was from a Spanish doctor, Pedro de Santander, who may or may not be Pedro Menendez de Alaves. I'm not sure if it was him or not, the famous conquistador, because he died in Santander, but he wasn't born in Santander. So Dr. Pedro de Santander, I don't know if he was a doctor either, blah, blah, blah. It is lawful that your majesty, like a good shepherd appointed by the hand of the eternal father, should tend and lead out your sheep, since the Holy Spirit has shown spreading pastures whereupon are feeding lost sheep, which have been snatched away by the dragon. And remember, America means land of the dragon. And I think I said that on the Tinfoil podcast, but I didn't say this. I forgot to say this. So exclusive Red Pill podcast, guys, only going to get it here. Dragon. Well, one of the first discoverers, you know, I don't know if you could say that, but one of the first major players in America, especially English America, was Francis Drake. Francis Drake, right. Now, from Drake is the same root word as dragon and draconian, but that's a topic for another time, maybe another episode.
Okay.
Francis Drake, pirates, stuff like that. Snatched away by the dragon, the demon. These pastures are the new world, wherein is comprised Florida, now in possession of the demon. And here he makes himself adored and revered. This is the land of promise, possessed by idolaters. The Amorite, Amalekite, Moabite, and Canaanite. This is the land promised by the Eternal Father to the faithful, since we are commanded by God in the Holy Scriptures to take it from them, being idolaters, and by reason of their idolatry and sin, to put them all to the knife, leaving no living things save maidens and children, their cities robbed and sacked, their walls and houses leveled to the earth. Damn. That's what they did.
Yeah.
But the important part right there, the major takeaway: Amorite, Amalekite, Moabite, and Canaanite. If you've read the first book of the Bible, Genesis, you will know these are the inhabitants of the Fertile Crescent, Mesopotamia. Well, Mesopotamia is Mexopotamia. The Gulf of Mexico is the one and only true Fertile Crescent. And this, it may not verify it, although I think it does, it certainly substantiates it. The Amorite are Syrians. Mm-hmm. If you look up Amorite, the definition of Amorite, that Syrian, well, that's also where we get the word more. Amorite. Amalekite. Well, Malachite comes from the Congo. Moabite, that's a desert. That's a biblical desert. Mm-hmm. And that's where we named one of our national parks after.
Right? Moab.
Yeah. Exactly. So Canaanite. Now, Canaanite is the important one because almost everyone in the Old Testament is some type of a Canaanite.
Canaanite, yeah.
And the Phoenicians are explicitly Canaanites. That is confirmed. The Phoenicians are Canaanites. Now, we're told that Canaan, was just a little tiny little strip of Israel and Cyprus. And yeah, they had some territory in North Africa. Well, their territory in Israel was tiny, abysmal, compared to the empires that they rivaled just next door. Now, Carthage is more telling of their true power. Carthage was a big, big, big chunk of North Africa, right? Mm-hmm. And that was controlled by the Phoenicians. So the Phoenician homeland is just this tiny little strip of Israel. Because, you know, the Greek homeland was small, but not that small. It was big enough where you could wrap your head around them, subjugating the people around them. With the Phoenicians, okay, how did they sustain themselves when they weren't on their boats? What was their true homeland? What was their true food? What was their purpose other than just mercantile, you know, lifestyle? It seems like they didn't have any. They have no written history, to our knowledge, virtually none. And what they do have comes from Carthage, right? Mm-hmm. Well, just the regular seafaring Phoenicians, we don't hear much about. We hear so little about them. Carthage was destroyed, right? Rome came out victorious, or at least painted themselves as victorious. And maybe the victory wasn't as swift as they've led us to believe. Maybe this victory was drawn out. This war was drawn out very, very up until the recent day. And that's what we've been lied to about. The Seminole Wars. What if I told you the Seminole Wars of the mid-1800s were a continuation of this holy war between the Catholics persecuting who they see as rivals, as a threat to their claim to, you know, spiritual superiority. And these four names being named right here in Florida is of extreme importance.
Certainly.
You know, I heard you mention something about red-haired Phoenicians earlier, but I mean, when you put that together with the statement that you made that the Phoenicians were the Vikings, I mean, obviously Vikings were said to have red hair as well. I would like to dive into that idea at a later date, too. But we are almost at the end of the show and we've got Eric on the line. Eric, can you go ahead and unmute?
Yes, certainly. Certainly, Zach.
Hey, welcome to the program. How are you?
Good, good. Just enjoying the conversation. It's a great conversation. It's just your comments about the copper in Pennsylvania while he was talking about the art brought up some interesting points that I've come across in my own like research of just biblical archaeology.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Excellent.
You too, if you like, it's just like a summarization. Somebody's like an unbiased opinion in summation of Ron Wyatt's amateur archaeological discoveries. So the boat he's talking about that's petrified is, and it's in the mountains of Ararat. It's not on what we actually call the mountain of Ararat, which is a single mountain. Mm-hmm. It's on a mountain about 6 miles away. But in that time period, that entire area was Ararat. So it would have been the mountains of Ararat, not a single mountain. It would have been an entire range.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
But so there are the way that they first outlined it and found this boat before they started digging up like the petrified remains of it was with metal detectors. And there shouldn't have been metal at this time because you're talking around 5000 BC or around a long time ago. You know, it's the first account after Adam. You know, Noah was the 11th generation on the planet, right? Mm-hmm. Adam being the first, Noah would have been the 11th.
Right.
So and then what we should consider, right? So Noah's Ark could have been built anywhere. We don't really get a lot of geological information from the Bible or geographical information from the Bible about where Noah settled and those people and where it was built. Because you have to remember, around another 800 to 1,000 years after Noah's Ark was the Tower of Babel, the account of the Tower of Babel. So that entire period would have been on, if you learned about Pangaea in school, mm-hmm. when the continents were all mostly connected, that's when the story of Noah would have taken place. And it would have been about 800 to 1,000 years later when the Tower of Babel was built and the continents were divided, or what science likes to call maybe the Younger Dryas event.
Sure.
But I just thought that was a neat point he had talked on there. It made me think back to the Ark, and because I'd watched that recently. But a great show. I love it. I love this type of conversation. They're very interesting.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much. Appreciate you calling in. Narco, tell us what we're looking at here with the, I mean, the similarities are stunning.
Right. So this is kind of the holy grail of mm-hmm. archaeology, that they will not allow the people the satisfaction of understanding. This simple fact alone of Finnish being Phoenician stitches together two halves of history that we're told have no relation whatsoever, even though it's apparent. Geographically, it's apparent. Linguistically, it's apparent, right? That basically the Phoenicians are some of the oldest, you know, civilized, complex, maritime people that we know of. They were taller than their opponents on average. They typically had what we'd call more European bearded, long bearded genes. So certainly not sub-Saharan African. If they did have North African genes originally, they would have been very little. These were Phoenician people, I believe, were Finnish in origin. And they would have taught seafaring to the people that they met in their colonies, such as North Africa. But the Phoenicians did not originate in the Mediterranean. I think this is very, very apparent. These boats, these dragon boats, so both a Phoenician boat and a Finnish Viking boat would have been called a dragon boat because they had a dragon, sometimes maybe a phoenix, mm-hmm. on their bow, on the front of their ship. And basically, this is also where you get the two oldest written alphabets in the world. Phoenician is Punic, and you actually get the word Punic from Phoenician. We'll turn that PH into a P, turn that OE into a U, and then you have Punic. Phonic is Punic. Viking. There's Swedish, there's Norwegian. Well, there's also Finnish. And Finnish Vikings are... Finnish is... So many rabbit holes, you know, I'm trying to keep... for the sake of brevity, J.R.R. Tolkien knew much of this. And he used Finnish to construct his Elfin languages. Mm-hmm. Elfin is Finnish. The elves... El is the Phoenician word for God. Finn is what Phoenicians were referred to. In Ireland, they were called Finnegans, or Finns. Well, in Finland, they called themselves Suomi. That's where you get Sumerian, because when they land in Sumeria, when they land in Iraq, they start calling themselves Suomi, or Suomerian. Right, so that's where you get your Sumerian from. But the Punic runic connection is important. It's just as important as this Viking ship. I'll show you what I'm talking about.
I've also seen comparisons of the Phoenician alphabet to the runic alphabet, and it's fairly similar too.
Oh, it's exact.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you still see my screen?
Yeah.
That yep. is runic on the top. That is Punic on the top. Runic on the bottom. Mm-hmm. And it is purely coincidence that that spells out FUPA. I actually did not know that until Sam Tripoli pointed that out to me. I didn't even know. Oh, I didn't realize. But runic and punic are the same thing. So runic would have been being written by Vikings.
Mm-hmm.
Punic would have been written by the Phoenicians. Both of these people were Rome's greatest enemies. So what did Rome do? Rome took their two biggest, or actually their one, so that's what I'm getting at. Mm-hmm. Rome took their one greatest opponent and split them in half in history.
Mm-hmm.
And said, oh, this smaller empire we dealt with, and this other smaller empire we dealt with at a different time, when really that was a empire that rivaled Rome in size, strength, technology, if not surpassed Rome. And it was probably through treachery that Rome conquered this nation, not through just strength alone. And well, that's really it. Runic, Punic, the ships are the same. This is your two ancient seafaring people. The only seafaring people that could travel the open seas in the ancient world were the Vikings and the Phoenicians. They both knew how to use the stars. The Romans and Greeks did not. The Egyptians, not so much. And their writing system is the same. And this is important. Why? Because these are descendants, common ancestors of, sorry, common descendants. Descendants who share a common ancestor, and that ancestor is the Atlanteans. They come from the Atlantic.
Oh, man. Okay. I want to talk about Atlantis on the next show, because there is just so much there. Yeah, I've had a great time hanging out with you tonight. I want to thank you very much for being here. I need to say thank you to FilterDog1, who says, boom, great show. Bring him back. We'll set that up. Don't go anywhere when I end the show for the audience, because I want to make sure that we talk about this. And then Omazon says, you always get your money's worth from Zach's guests. Great show. I'm glad that everybody enjoyed it. You know, Narco, at the end of the show, I always like to ask the guest, what would you like the audience to most take away from our conversation tonight?
Man, should have given me some time to think about that one. But ingest more citrus, smoke more pot, drink less alcohol, and I think that can only help you, not hurt you.
Okay.
So.
All right. Once again, thank you for being here. Thank you to everybody out in the audience. I'm going to go ahead and pass out the gold pills over on the foxhole.
And sorry, one last question. Is red pill the antithesis to blue chew?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely the antithesis to blue anything. But yeah, the blue chew. What? I don't understand the reference.
Those are the boner pills.
That Sam has it as an advertiser. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You're guaranteed to have plenty of testosterone and manly affectation by taking the red pill. Okay. The gold pills have been passed out over on Foxhole. Thank you very much for hanging out with us tonight. Tomorrow night, I have two guests, actually. At 8:30, Jake Lang is going to be calling into the show from his new prison digs. If everybody is familiar with Jake, he is one of the January 6th defendants. He has been held without trial for a really long time now. And then at 9 p.m., Loy Brunson, who is the man behind that very important Supreme Court case, which is coming up before the justices very shortly, he'll be here at 9 p.m. So be here early tomorrow night at 8:30, and then we're going to have a full show after that. Narco, thank you again for being here. I really appreciate it. Don't go anywhere. And for everybody else at home, we'll see you tomorrow. Good luck and God bless.